Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Consilio's Better Places podcast, where I can genuinely say I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by another Enfield man, Councillor Ergin Erbil, leader of Enfield Council. Ergin, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on here, Nick.
No problem at all. So, you have lived all your life in Enfield, I think
I'm
saying?
I'm born in Chase Farm Hospital.
Yep.
And I've lived in Edmonton my whole adult life and pretty much lived in Enfield North for a little while. Mm-hmm. But from the age of 10, lived in Edmonton. And I still live in Edmonton with my two kids.
Brilliant. Well, I used to live on St. Peter's Road for a few years, so know the area very well. You got into politics at quite a young age. How old were you when you first became a councillor?
I was 23 years old when I became a councillor for Edmonton Greenwood, my home.
Yep.
And it's been a true honour. I'm really proud of the work we've been doing in Edmonton Green. A lot of the new levels of funding that we're receiving from the government, mm-hmm. we're doing some great things to create a cleaner and a safer Edmonton and Enfield.
Yeah. So 23 is a young age. Most people at 23, I think it's probably fair to say, aren't dreaming of spending their nights in a council chamber. So what inspired you to get involved, firstly, with the Labour Party? Just for clarity, you are a Labour Party councillor. But to become not just a member of the Labour Party, but also an activist and then a councillor at 20. Well, you'd have to have started younger than that, so around 2021. What made you want to get involved?
I was involved in grassroots football in mm-hmm. Pimm's Park in Edmonton.
Okay.
I used to play every Saturday with my brother and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Councillor Andrew Stafford, may he rest in peace, he secured grant funding for him and the other councillors of the mm-hmm. time, secured grant funding for our grassroots football.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a light bulb went off in my head where I said, mm-hmm. yeah, I want to do this when I finish university and go into local politics, because mm-hmm. you can see real change happening on your doorstep. You can improve great things. And it was the likes of Andrew and others who pushed mm-hmm. us to get involved in local politics.
Well, I'm still waiting to see you at Pimm's Park run on a Saturday. that invite is still there. So you became a councillor. And pretty soon, relatively speaking, you were deputy leader of the council when Nessel Kalaskan was leader. Again, more and more responsibility at quite a young age. You must be quite driven to really want to deliver for the council.
Yeah, absolutely. Nessel was a great boss. Mm-hmm. She took Enfield from strength to strength, and now she's doing a great job as an MP. I served 2 years as chief whip, I was in charge of discipline in my Labour group in Enfield. Mm-hmm. And then I spent 2 years serving as associate cabinet member, and then finally 2 years as deputy leader to mm-hmm. Nessel and supporting her, deputising for her. And over the past 9 to 10 months, I've been the new-ish leader of Enfield.
But yeah, so Nessel became MP for down in Barking.
Yeah.
You were then unopposed, I believe, as leader of the council, which obviously a great show of faith in you from your colleagues.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious, in some respects, difference between being deputy and the leader. But how have you found it the past 9 months with this extra responsibility?
Yeah. It's tough. The loneliest place in the mountain is at the top of the mountain.
True.
Do you know what I mean? So it's tough, but I'm very grateful that I've got a very strong team of colleagues. My mm-hmm. cabinet members are strong. My backbenchers, my Labour group, they all get stuck in. They're all very active.
Mm-hmm.
They all stand up for their communities and their residents. And our officers are great. And as you know, we've got a new wave of officers,
mm-hmm.
people who have joined the organisation, new CEO, new leader, a new start for Enfield, taking Enfield from strength to strength,
mm-hmm.
working really hard day and night for a cleaner and a safer Enfield. And it's personal to me because like you, I'm raising kids in the borough.
Yep.
And like you, I've lived in the borough for a significantly long mm-hmm. time. And it is our home, and we have to make it safer and cleaner for everyone.
Yeah, no, and I should also declare I am a former councillor in Enfield, and I know how much hard work it is, frankly, and how much hard work goes in that people don't see being a councillor. I can only imagine as the leader as well. So you've got a vision that you've set out since becoming leader for a fairer, cleaner, greener, safer Enfield. How is that translating itself in terms of the priorities you're focusing on?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Safer, cleaner are the priorities?
Yep.
For a safer Enfield, we're working really hard with our police officers and with our voluntary and community groups in the borough. For example, we've just started weekend patrols in our parks, where two police officers and two of our council officers patrol in our parks, and they tackle antisocial behaviour. They also support people who may need their support, and they also tackle any noise issues or barbecue issues or anything else. But that's just one example of how we're working with the police. We're also doing Operation Pisces.
Okay.
We've helped arrest over 600 people in Edmonton thanks to Operation Pisces.
And what's that focusing on, Pisces?
Tackling prostitution, drug dealing, tackling organised crime.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a really good job with that, and I'm really proud of the work we're doing. It's not just about arresting people. It's also supporting them and making sure they've got the support. They get advice on how to get a job, in how to get advice from our services, and also working with our young people.
Yep.
Just like I was supported by Andrew when all those years ago, playing grassroots football in Pimm's Park, we want to support the young people of 2025 to make those decisions.
And I think it's that support that's the key. So I remember going to a meeting that Nestle chaired down on Joyce and Snell's soon after she became leader of the council. And, you know, it was clear the prostitution challenges there were. And on the one hand, we need enforcement. And it was a real problem. And residents were saying, you know, they don't like living in an area where those issues are. But then you also have the human element of feeling for people who are in that position, and that support is key, isn't it? And that's something the council is pursuing.
Absolutely. You have to do the education and the enforcement together. You can't do just one.
Yeah.
You have to do education and enforcement together. Let me tell you a quick story. Mm-hmm. So since we've started Operation Pisces, where my mechanic is based in Upper Edmonton Angel, where I get my tyres changed and my car serviced. His name is Serdar. I took my car to Serdar recently and he goes, Ergin, you've got more police officers on the street. Your council staff are great. They're on our high street. We can see a real difference. The crime is down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, thanks, Serdar. Thanks for the positive feedback. Mm. We'll keep it up. And then I go and speak to my friend Demet, who lives in Joyce and Snell's, and her kids are similar age to my kids. Yep. And Demet goes, Ergin, honestly, there used to be prostitution in our lifts and in the stairways. And we don't see that anymore. And it's all been tackled. And the drug dealing has been tackled on the estate. And I say, thanks, Demet, for the positive feedback. And then I go meet Selena, who runs a coffee shop on 4th Street. And she says the same thing. So the positive feedback from the community, from the people we love and we care for in Edmonton, that feedback is so important for us. And we have to build on that. We have to build on
it. Well, 4th Street was looking clean the last time I was there for the victory parade for the Champions of Europe. But that's another thing. We've got the local plan, which is generating a lot of headlines in Enfield, so to speak, and more online. It's interesting with the local papers becoming less and less online, social media becoming more and more. It's probably best to talk in social media terms. A lot of people are talking about the new local plan, and you inherited, I guess, well, you obviously as deputy leader, you were involved, but really, I think Nestle seemed to be driving that forward externally. Yes. It certainly looked like that. So you've become leader with a local plan. How is that going, the local plan?
Every borough needs a local plan. Mm-hmm. As you know, it's important that you have a plan for your area to make sure the right homes are built in the right places, the right businesses are built in the right areas and supported, and young people are supported, and also that we have a future-looking plan to support, to take the borough from strength to strength. The local plan is really important for us. Mm-hmm. It means that if we can get it through the stages, and if we can adopt the new local plan, we're going to be able to build family-sized homes. Personally, I desperately need a family-sized home myself as leader, and I know other people of my age need that as well. I rent a two-bed flat with two very small children. We and other people in my position live in overcrowded, small settings. So it's important that we build family-sized, affordable homes. And the only way we can do that is if we have a local plan.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of the controversial parts of the local plan is that we're proposing to build on a small section of the green belt that we have in the borough. 40% of the borough is green belt and it's parks and it's open spaces and it's beautiful. And we spend £10 million a year to protect our green spaces and parks. And they're so important. The local plan is suggesting that we only build on 7% of that 40%, a tiny amount of the green belt that we want to build on. And let me be clear, mm-hmm. the green belt that I'm talking about is not forests. We're not going to build on parks. We're not going to build on forests. We're proposing that we build on the car parks, golf courses, and the garden centres, mm-hmm. on already built up areas where we desperately need family-sized homes. And we have to have that serious conversation.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. I remember attending one meeting and a lady was saying, we can't build on the green belt, we can't do this kind of that. And I don't mean to disparage, you know, that was her passionate views. And in the next breath, she said, I'm going to go see my grandkids. My son had to move to Harlow because he can't afford to live in Enfield. And I, you know, it is difficult. You know, people do care for the environment. But if we need family homes, surely we can't just build taller buildings. They have an important role to play as well in terms of delivering the numbers needed and build to rent, but we need family homes in Enfield. And I'm the same. It's like I look for my daughter and think, how is she ever going to be able to afford maybe possibly a one-bed flat somewhere, but how is she going to be able to afford a house in Enfield at the moment, because we just don't build enough of them in the borough. And this isn't the land unless we look at Greenbelt.
And the suggestion from the opposition is that we build in already built up areas, in already areas that are densely populated, but that is not an option for us. We can't ask that we build more in places like Hertford Road or all places that already have flats and high buildings. What we do need is to have a serious conversation about car parks that have been labelled as Greenbelt and golf courses that have been labelled as these beautiful parks, which they're not. Let's be serious. Let's be honest with ourselves.
And we don't actually have public access.
And golf courses don't have public access. I took my daughter. She was in the pram at the time. She was a toddler. So we walked through Whitewebs Golf Course once. We were told to get off because people were trying to play. People were trying to play golf. So these places aren't. They don't have public access. I want to make it very clear that our proposals are to build on car parks, garden centres and golf courses, not to build on parks or on green spaces like that.
Well, last time I played at Trent Park, it was about 15 years ago, and I was so bad, I'd advise not walking anywhere near it when I've got a golf club in my hand. It was that bad. What kind of targets is the local plan setting for, let's carry on, stay on the theme of housing, but also crucially the employment land as well, because not many people are aware, Enfield, as well as having 40% Greenbelt, has a huge, huge amount of industrial land, doesn't it? Which, in certainly from a GLA perspective, are actually looking to increase the amount of industrial land there is in London, correctly, in some ways, because of the amount of employment it brings. But for a borough like Enfield, which has 40% Greenbelt, I'm not sure the percentage, a big chunk of industrial land, and the GLA is asking for more to be given, how do you manage that in the plan process? It must be quite challenging.
It's a really good question. We need to build homes, but like you've very openly and clearly said, we need to build those jobs and skills and industry as well. Enfield's motto is "By industry ever stronger," as you know, that's our slogan. So we do have one of the largest industrial estates in Europe, the Ely Industrial Estate, Brimsdown Industrial Estate, all of that Eastern Corridor and pockets of industrial estate everywhere else. It's so important that we invest in business, in skills, in jobs. We do 4 recruitment days every year. Over 1,000 people join, mostly young people, where we give them good job advice and good job opportunities. We also have a construction skills academy. We've also done a business networking event, which I will invite you to the next
one.
Thank you. We also do procurement 101 seminars for small businesses, teaching them how to apply for council contracts and demystifying the process. The local plan will create thousands of jobs, and it's as simple as that. And it's so important. We need those electricians, plumbers, we need those bricklayers, we need those AI experts, those tech experts to create a stronger future for the UK, for London, for Enfield. And it's only through those strong jobs that we can create, it's only through those strong jobs that we can create a stronger community. And just to go back to how do we balance the industrial and the homes, as you say, we're a tale of two cities. We've got beautiful green space. We've got opportunity to build homes on those spaces that aren't being utilized to their best use, like golf courses, car parks. And we've got lots of concrete industrial estate where we can rebuild good industrial areas.
One of the major areas in Enfield that many people will have heard of is, it always amazes me how few people, you know, in London actually aware of what Enfield has in many respects. But I think there's been a lot, certainly in the built environment world, talk about Meridian Water and the potential that has to deliver around 10,000 homes. You mentioned the Skills Academy, which I think I assume is the site that's been done with Vistry down at Meridian. How is that going from the council perspective, Meridian Water?
It is brilliant. Yeah. And I'm so grateful to all of our partners, Vistry, the College of North East London and others, and all the lovely people that we're working with down there to improve Meridian Water. So there have been some delays. Mm-hmm. There have been some delays, just like there have been delays with all other construction sites across the country because of crashed economy, Brexit, mm-hmm. COVID, you name it. All of these issues have had an impact.
Every year there's another thing, isn't there?
Every year there's another thing. Yeah. But I'm really happy to confirm that last year we built 300 homes in Meridian Water. This year we're going to build 300 homes. And next year we're going to build 800 homes. In total, 10,000 homes, 6,000 jobs. Mm-hmm. This is changing real lives. I met a new resident of Meridian Water where I handed over her keys to congratulate her on securing a home. Her name was Tina. Tina was supported by Enfield Council. She was on our housing waiting list as someone who was a looked after child in Enfield. She secured a one bed flat in Meridian Water. We also helped her find a job in central London through our advice careers. And we built her a train station so she can get to her job at Meridian Water. Yeah. So those are four ways that we have improved Tina's life. There are thousands of Tinas out there. There are thousands of young people who we are going to support through the likes of Meridian Water, through our new local plan, homes, jobs, a much stronger Enfield.
It's always struck me Meridian Water can be a good example of how local councils, the Greater London Authority and the government, I mean, funding is cut across both governments, both parties, if you
like.
If all three parts of the public sector work together, it can actually encourage the private sector to then have the confidence to invest. And I think we seem to be seeing that in Meridian Water because an awful lot of money from government has come in to fund the infrastructure, which is needed first before the homes are built.
Absolutely. And I'm really grateful to the government, to the Mayor of London, and to all of our partners for believing in Meridian Water and for investing in it. And we have reassured them by saying we are serious. We want to build. We want to improve Enfield. And also it's working with the likes of the NHS and the police as well, because some of those new homes are for key workers and North Middlesex Hospital staff have secured homes there thanks to the affordability. And some of those homes are shared ownership. Some of those homes are built to rent. Most of those homes are social, affordable. Mm-hmm. We're also going to have a GP clinic there. We're also going to have businesses, a diagnostics clinic. We're going to have a nighttime economy, leisure, facilities. Mm-hmm. It's going to be beautiful and I can't wait.
Brilliant. Well, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be fantastic. And obviously at North Middlesex, we also have Vistry and the GLA combining for the proposed development there. And we also have Joyce and Snell's Estate, which is a council-led scheme. So within Meridian Water, Joyce and Snell's, North Middlesex and Edmonton Green within that space. I mean, it's probably one of the largest development areas in London, really. I mean, it's quite remarkable how much could happen here. But how is Joyce and Snell's progressing? Because the council got planning permission for the redevelopment of the estate with the support of residents who supported it in the ballot. So where are we with that now?
It's going really well. And Joyce and Snell's also benefits from Operation Pisces. So we're making the estate safer. And we're rebuilding the estate. All of the residents who live there, who are council tenants, will be offered nicer homes, much better homes, when the redevelopment is finished. And we are looking at meanwhile uses and whatnot. It's going really well. And we are close to seeing some construction take place.
And I've cited this as a place where it looks like a council's got it right with respect to small businesses and providing space for the genuine local people to set up businesses. Is it Angel Yard? Can you just explain a bit more about that?
Angel Yard is a brilliant, brilliant scheme. Angel Yard, as you know, and I'm really grateful to you for bringing it up, Angel Yard used to be garages and they used to attract antisocial behaviour. Yeah. They were not used. So working with the Mayor of London and with our partners and with local businesses, we got rid of the garages and instead we put small business units there and it's called Angel Yard. And they're tiny business sheds. I call them business sheds, but they're called business incubators. And they're small, maybe as big as this room that we're in now. They cost about £200, £300 a month for a small business, which is brilliant.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
And you can be I've met a small accountant, Mr. Ed, I think his name was Ed I. and I was a small accountant. Mm-hmm. He's based there. And there's a lovely little nail salon there as well that's growing. And that's where I get my nails done, actually.
Fantastic.
We can go together next time. And there's an architect based there. There's an artist based there. There's a nice little food space there, Caribbean food space. And it's just brilliant. And this is how we improve our neighborhoods. We give them the business opportunities. We support them through making the area safer, cleaner. And we build brilliant family-sized homes.
Mm-hmm. So housing obviously does also rely on the private sector to have the confidence to invest within a location. And to meet the, frank, challenging housing targets, which have been set not just by GLA, but by both governments, previous and current, for Enfield to deliver a lot more homes than have been delivered. What kind of assurance can you give to the private sector about how, you know, how much confidence they should have it's a place that they can invest in?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're really ambitious. Mm-hmm. We want to build thousands of homes because our residents need those homes. There is a housing crisis. We need to fix it. People who are my age who need to be able to afford family homes and get onto the property ladder are relying on us to do the right thing.
Yep.
If the private sector want to work with us and if they want to build our affordable and social homes, our family homes, if they want to help us improve Enfield, make Enfield a safer and a cleaner place and an improved borough, our doors are open and we want to work with them.
And one of the other challenges, which I don't think many people will be aware of, is the temporary accommodation challenge that you have as a council. Also probably linked to that, HMOs, houses are multiple occupancy with the stock increasingly around where I live. Houses are now being converted to HMOs whenever they come on the market. Family homes just, I mean, they're disappearing, to your point about there not being enough family homes. That's a large reason is because of the HMOs. But that's temporary accommodation is a huge financial challenge to the borough. Do you just want to maybe explain so people are aware of the challenges councils are facing at the moment?
It's a huge issue.
Yep.
And temporary accommodation and homelessness are massive, massive issues. When I became a councillor, 7.5 years ago, we received about 500 families as homeless every year who presented to the council. 500 families homeless every year. Now it's 500 families every month who present to us as homeless. That's 6,000 homeless families that we have to look after. Legally, we have to provide them with homes.
And the council has to pay for that.
The council
as well, isn't it?
Has to pay for that. And sometimes we have to put them in, you know, in accommodation that may be outside of London.
Yeah.
I didn't get into politics to do that. I don't want to ask families to move out of London, but we have no other options. The only alternative option for us is that the council may go bankrupt if we don't tackle this homelessness issue, which is why I'm really grateful to the new Labour government who have given us £17 million more pounds to tackle homelessness. And they're serious. They're serious about tackling the temporary accommodation and the homelessness issue. But it's not just about giving those homeless families temporary accommodation. It's about building.
Yep.
It's about building the homes that they so desperately need. HMOs are not the answer.
No.
Not all HMOs, but most HMOs attract antisocial behaviour, waste issues, fly tipping, rubbish issues. Just this morning, I was talking to a wonderful Member of Parliament and I was asking her to support our bid to put more controls around HMOs and to prevent more HMOs because they do impact our neighbourhoods negatively. I'm sorry to say it. And most of them are in the Eastern Corridor. But like you said, they're being built in Winchmore Hill and Palmer's Green, other places as well. We have to stop it. HMOs are not the answer. We need to build homes. We need to build them fast so we can support those families.
Hey, what strikes me with HMOs is once there's probably majority on a street, the homeowners, those who are families, those whose kids are at the primary schools, which we know, you know, it's just not pressure on places, it's the opposite. They're, you know, numbers are dropping. It's because people are leaving because there's so many HMOs. And
absolutely,
the impact on, I saw it when I live in Edmonton, I'm starting to see it now in Palmer's Green. It's incredible. And again, like temporary accommodation, HMOs, a lot of people aren't aware of the challenges the councils, police, etc., have in managing this situation.
And Nick, as you know, your home dictates your environment and it dictates your development as a young person. Your home means everything and your home is your castle and your home should be a safe space. HMOs and other options, I don't think provide that safe space, especially for young people. But to give Tina as an example, where we've helped that young person find a job, get to her house. We've built the train station so she can get to her job. This is us building a stronger Enfield, a stronger London, a stronger UK. And I'm a strong believer in if we can change our neighbourhoods, we can change our towns. If we can change our towns, we can change our boroughs. If we can change our boroughs, we can change our cities. And if we can change our cities, we can change our country.
And then we'll go for the world after that one. And we'll finish, we'll change the world while we're at it as well. Brilliant.
This is what we've got to do.
It's great to see someone with such ambition for the borough. So for local plan is... what's the current process? A lot of our listeners are focused on the built environment. So where is the current status of a local plan? And when do you think we'll see this increase in house building in the borough, which we need?
It's a good question. It's a good question. So currently it's at stage two and there are examinations going and the inspector is doing his thing with the examinations and whatnot. Our teams are making representations. I think, I'm not too sure, towards the end of this year, I think we're going to see some real progress.
Brilliant. Well, I think on behalf of many people with younger children in the borough, we would like to see that accelerate so we can get the homes built.
And I just want to say, as Enfield, we're leading by example because even before the new government rightly said we need to build, we need to back the builders, we need those homes, we need to rebuild the economy, even before the new government was saying that, we've been saying that, as you know, for seven years. And Nessil, my predecessor, done a fantastic job. She really set the agenda and showed that we've got the backbone. We've got the backbone to rebuild the economy.
Fantastic. Well, Ergin, thank you very much for your time today. I very much look forward to seeing Enfield grow under your leadership in the future.
Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you for your time.
Brilliant.
Thank you.